This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. From January to July 2018, Malaysia became the world's top destination for plastic waste exports. Even today, we are still reeling from pollution and effects caused by other countries' wastes and a sharp rise in illegal recycling facilities and illegal dump sites. And land, water and air pollution has also resulted from all of this. The Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, or the C4 Centre, conducted research into the issue and found that the problems plaguing the plastic recycling industry include allegations of smuggling, factories operating with no proper licence and pollution controls, gangsterism, political business nexus, and also a lack of public access to information. How can Malaysia hope to clean up plastic pollution and tackle the corruption that's also causing it? So in conjunction with Plastic Free July, I'm going to discuss this and more with Wong Pui Yee, who is a researcher with the Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism. And she also authored the report, Malaysia is Not a Garbage Dump, Citizens Against Corruption, Complacency, Crime and the Climate Crisis. Welcome, Pui Yee. How are you today?
Thanks, Juliet. I'm as well as I could be.
Under the circumstances, thank you so much for joining me today. So Pui, you know, we caught up earlier this year, right, to talk about that report that I mentioned earlier. But I guess, you know, just to set the tone again for people who are unfamiliar with it, can you once again explain that plastic waste crisis of 2018 that I was talking about? You know, it's got to do with China's national sword policy and the repercussions from that. Can you just briefly explain that?
Yes. So in 2019, suddenly Malaysia was hit by a lot of plastic waste. People realized that suddenly around their homes, there's a lot of burning happening, and then groups of residents suddenly found piles and piles, even mountains of plastic trash hidden within oil palm estates near their housing areas. So what happened at that time was China, in 2017, China announced to the World Trade Organization that they want to ban waste imports. So it's not just plastic waste, it also includes textile, paper, iron ore, things like that, different types of waste. So for the past 30-40 years, the world's waste has been going to China to be processed, to be recycled as raw materials for their manufacturing industry. And actually, earlier, even in 2013, China decided, okay, this is very polluting, we need to do something about it. So in 2013, they had a plan to, it's called Operation Green Fence. So they wanted to enhance enforcement. So in 2013 onwards, they tried to conduct more stringent checks on the imports. And then in 2017, they decided, okay, forget all this enhancing enforcement, we're going to ban all this mixed waste once and for all. Mm-hmm. So this national sword policy came into effect in January 2018. So it's an industry of its own, materials recovery, recycling. It's a whole industry. There are traders, there's a global value chains all over the world. So they jumped at this announcement, and then they started looking for other markets to export their waste to, aside from China. So Malaysia became a victim at the time. Yeah.
A lot of it was coming here, right? And, you know, in that report that we spoke about the last time, you know, again, it's called Malaysia is Not a Garbage Dump, Citizens Against Corruption, Complacency, Crime and Climate Crisis. You sort of laid out, you know, some of the reasons why Malaysia became such a, I guess, ideal destination for all of these plastic waste recycling businesses, right? Can you elaborate?
Yeah, so is it okay if I go back a little bit into why we started the whole research?
Sure, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, so we are C4 Centre. We are Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism. Why are we looking at waste, right? Why are we looking right. at environmental issue? So at the time, we had a forum on good governance, and one of the residents affected from Sungai Petani, Dr. Teo, came and did a presentation on how bad the pollution and the illegal activity is. So we started wondering what is happening? How can all this so-called illegal activity, if it's really illegal and it's happening out in the open, how can it go on so easily? So that was our angle to look into the illegality, what is illegal about it, and how it has managed to take place. So first I started asking the residents, what have you seen, what have you heard, what is happening? And they brought me around to visit several very open dump sites and very badly run industrial areas, very dirty areas. And they told me all sorts of stories. And from their stories, I moved on to interviewing enforcement officers and also political representatives, MPs and ADUNs. And so we are a center to combat corruption, and we obviously believe that corruption is the root of all evil. Okay? The love of money is so-called the root of all evil, and corruption involves money, right? You're corrupt because you love money. So I think all Malaysians know the core problems that exist in Malaysia. And in this case, in this plastic waste crisis, the same issues arose. Number one would be petty corruption. People closing one eye when enforcing the law, when conducting monitoring and checks, people giving bribes. So that's one. Corruption involves both parties, the giver and the receiver. So that was one. It was impossible for me to speak to anyone who was willing to bribe, who was willing to talk about their experiences bribing others, or anyone who has taken bribes. Everyone that I spoke to, all the government officers and the representatives, politicians, all said that they are clean and they are strongly against corruption. But from the stories of the residents, we know that some hanky-panky is going on, because undeniably, there is a lot of illegal activity being allowed. So that's one. And two, it might not be corruption per se. It could also be complacency or just a lack of initiative, perhaps. After years of a type of suppressive environment, unfortunately, our enforcement officers, our civil servants, who play a very, very important role in driving the country forward, they have a mentality, saya yang menurut perintah. So I do what my boss tells me to. If not, there will be repercussions. So it's this whole culture of following what the boss says that has led us here today, I feel. So that's what I meant by complacency in my report. And also, there was a lot of different enforcement agencies involved, a lot of overlapping jurisdictions, or even there's this problem, who is supposed to solve it? Nobody really knew. So when this problem came, it took some time for the government to sort everything out. So that's the second. So firstly, I felt corruption. Secondly, was complacency. Thirdly, there was this uncertainty of who's going to do what. So these are the three main reasons why it escalated so quickly.
You know, as you said, Puyi, you know, you went down to the ground for this report, right? You did the research, you spoke to the community members who were being directly impacted by all this illegal recycling and all this illegal dumping, right? What did you see for yourself, you know, from the sites that you visited? Because I think, if I'm not wrong, you yourself saw the devastating impacts on people and the environment from what was happening.
Yeah, so I was aware of this issue when it first happened. I saw it in the newspapers. Okay, YB Obiyin is at the port. She's stopping all this rubbish. Okay, and that's it. I never thought how the situation was on the ground. So I went to three different places for my research. One is Selangor, a few different areas in Selangor, namely Jenjarum, Teluk, Panglima Garang, around Klang area, Pulau Keri area. And I also went up north to Sungai Petani and areas close to Sungai Petani. And then also to Bukit Matajam, Butterworth, Macang Bobo around there. So my first field trip, Miss Pua from Jenjarum, she brought me around to... At that time, I conducted my research in early 2020. At that time, supposedly, the issue has come down. There were new regulations in place. Supposedly, the mountains of rubbish has been cleared. But when Ms. Pua brought me around, so first we went to an abandoned light industrial area This was in Pulau Indah. And so there were just rows of shop lots. They were abandoned. They were derelict. Nobody was living in them. But then you could see that piles of rubbish were around. And then we realized that amidst all that mess and decay, there were people running operations. And apparently it was very active previously. When I went there in early 2020, it has quieted down. There were only maybe one or two people still running operations. And they left their waste there. They left jumbo bags full of plastic rubbish and even bales of plastic rubbish. And these rubbish were clearly from foreign countries because of the brands. We could clearly see the brands. So this was just left there. And then we found out that when rubbish is dumped, if it's on private land, the government must compel the private land owner to clear it. If it's on public land, the government will clear it. But if the government cannot find who owns the land or cannot force the private owner to clear it, then the rubbish is just there forever. So this was Pulau Indah, and the rubbish was just sitting there. Another place that she brought us to was in, it's near Jenjarum. It was piled high. So I think the BBC went there. They said that there were 17,000 tons of plastic waste there. So recently we went back there. It has been cleared. The mountains have been flattened. But you could see that there's still a lot of plastic waste along the side. And there is, if you dig past the bushes, the little plants at the bottom around the palm oil estate, there is plastic still hidden underneath. It's just that the grass grew over it.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And this place was stockpiling unrecyclable plastic waste, and it was also processing plastic, recycling plastic. So the process creates small plastic pellets. They are called nurdles. And these plastic pellets are causing a huge environmental disaster all over the world, on beaches, everywhere you can find these nurdles. There are actually movements abroad in the US, in the UK to try to collect these nurdles and to study the impacts to the environment. And so here in this oil palm estate, you could find nurdles. So you could find nurdles, you could find plastic rubbish. And so all this was, okay, fine. Palm oil estate, light industrial area, seemingly abandoned. Okay, that's fine. So then I went up north to Sungai Petani. That was quite disturbing when I first went there. Because, firstly, we went, so the residents there took me around. We went to industrial areas. Okay, fine. The industrial areas look a lot better than the one in Pulau Indah. But you can see that they're not well taken care of either. I was told by the residents there that a lot of industrial areas were set up in the maybe 1990s by Japanese companies, and the Japanese companies have now cleared out due to changes in the global value chains and the global economic climate. So once it cleared out, it's difficult to find people to replace them in the factories where they were housed. So this was how it happened in Sungai Petani. There was just a lot of space, a lot of industrial space. And when all this plastic came in, a lot of them were from China, businessmen from China, and they were paying high prices to rent these factories, either for processing or for dumping or whatever. So the landowners were very happy to just lease out their lands. They didn't know what they were leasing out their lands for. And so in Sungai Petani, I found, firstly, factories in operation, but they had piles and piles of plastic waste all around their compound. So fine, enforcement officers told me that it's their raw materials. So it's a lot of rubbish, but okay, it's their raw materials. And then next, we see that in factory lots, it really didn't look like raw materials. It wasn't even in bags. Rubbish was just dumped there. There was this land previously owned by another factory, and it looks like the people there said that there was a plastic syndicate. It looks like the syndicates were just throwing unrecycled waste on that piece of land, and they were just dumping there. When I raised it up with the enforcement officers, they also repeat this could be raw materials. These are people's private land. We cannot simply go in and say that they're polluting. So residents around there can see this mountain growing, and there's nothing that they could do. And the most disturbing one that I saw when I went to Sungai Petani was the local residents, they found an illegal dump site. And this dump site was in a Malay kampung. So I'm not sure how they even found it. But anyway, they brought me to it. There was two, actually. One already found, already reported, supposedly being cleared. And another one that was new that they recently found and haven't reported. So we went to both. The one that was already reported had someone guarding the front. So fine, we couldn't go in. The other one, we went in. And it was a former sand mining pit. Legal or illegal, I don't know. It was right beside the Sungai Muda, the river that feeds Penang, Kedah and Perlis. It was very close. And it was a mining pit, so I have no idea how deep the pool was. And the pool was just full of rubbish. And previously, before I started my research, all the rubbish that came in was in bags. You could see the brands and things like that. But when I started my research in 2020, the rubbish that I saw were all crushed. They were either crushed or they were burnt or they were mixed. So you cannot see the brands anymore. So when I mentioned this illegal dump site to representatives from the state government, they said that, how do you know there's imported plastic waste? These are just domestic waste that the people around there dump themselves. And they kept asking me to prove that it's imported waste. So I'm not living near there. I only experienced this one-off in one or two interviews, things like that. But it's the type of challenges that residents come up against if they are living in an area with a lot of pollution. And it's your word against my word all the time, I feel.
All right. I'm speaking today to Wong Kui Yee. She's a researcher at the Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, or the C4 Centre. She's also the author of the report titled Malaysia is Not a Garbage Dump, Citizens Against Corruption, Complacency, Crime and the Climate Crisis. And, you know, in conjunction with Plastic Free July, we're actually talking about plastic pollution. And today we're kind of focusing on the links between plastic pollution and also corruption. And we're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today is Wong Pui Yee. She's a researcher at the Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, or the C4 Centre. She's also the author of the report titled Malaysia is Not a Garbage Dump, Citizens Against Corruption, Complacency, Crime and Climate Crisis. And we're talking about the whole illegality surrounding plastic recycling in Malaysia, you know, how it happened, and of course the implication on people's safety and health and, you know, their basic rights to a safe, clean, healthy, sustainable environment. So before the break, Pui, you were talking about how you went on the ground, you know, and you know, you witnessed these really terrible things happening, but, you know, not in cities, right? In places outside where, you know, us city folk won't even have a clue of or whiff of what's happening. But, you know, one of the things that stood out for me was in this report when you said that a key difference between the plastic waste crisis and other forms of petty corruption, you know, poor governance, all of that, is that plastic waste has a direct and very tangible consequence on human environmental health, right? And that sort of awakened a lot of citizens to speak up against it, right? And, you know, as you said, a lot of them did speak up, but that had some quite detrimental effects to themselves, isn't it?
Yeah, so I have to praise Ms. Pua Le Ping because she was one of the first, in fact, I think the first to really speak up about all the burning and all the dumping around her home, around her village. And she got threatening calls. People were contacting her. And the worst was her house. Someone hired gangsters to splash red paint on her house. Yeah. Speaking to all these people, they are really, really brave. They might not be considered whistleblower in the sense that, oh, they are giving classified documents that their company was hiding or something like that. But they were seeing things that was not right around their areas, and they were speaking up about that. And that is so important because otherwise none of us would know what's happening. And among the consequences that they have had to bear was what I mentioned just now, red paint on your house, and her sister got red paint too. And another man in Sungai Petani, he took video of the factory next to his that was operating after being sealed by the local council, and then he got beaten up. badly by the people. And another common story would be the people complain, and then the local authorities turn on them. They got raided and they got fined instead. One man even said that the officer said, "Oh, this was what my boss told me. My boss told me to come and find you." So they were just looking for things to find him after he made a complaint. Another one would be being sued for defamation. That is a very serious drastic action taken. No one was sued so far in the plastics issue. But when I was doing my research, asking around about people affected by all this plastic waste, I came across, so you can see, you can read my chapter, my report, I think chapter 5. I cover a few other types of cases, not so much related to the plastic waste, but more related to how people living around industrial areas, the challenges that they have faced. So, and with the pollution, and among them, one person made many, many complaints about bad smells coming out of this factory. And then the factory sued him for defamation. I mean, they didn't sue him, they sent him a letter of demand. So that's the worst that can happen. So there's a lot of retaliation and a lot of detrimental actions that can happen to whistleblowers. So all whistleblowers should be protected. It's very important to be protected and appreciated lah.
Mm-hmm. And that is something C4 is really working towards, right? The protection of whistleblowers especially. And I think, you even have a session coming up with the DOE and the MACC soon about this, right? Especially for whistleblower protection for environmental activists.
Yes. Thanks for raising that. Yes, this Wednesday night, 8 p.m., we have a session, a webinar, to talk about whistleblowing and environmental protection, the important role of whistleblowers. So whistleblower comes with a lot of risk. And in Malaysia, we have a law to protect them, the Whistleblower Protection Act 2010. So I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know so much about the law. So please join us at the webinar to learn more about it. But it's C4's campaign to, number one, look at ways of reforming this law, because this law comes with a lot of loopholes and it doesn't provide whistleblowers with sufficient protections. The BAYU, the legal department under the Prime Minister's department, has identified areas within this law that needs to be reformed. So all of us know the problem. So we need to reform the law. We need public pressure on our members of parliament to enact the amendments to the law. We need to protect our whistleblowers properly with better laws, and also not just the law, but enforcement of the law and also judicial decisions at the courts. We also hope to create a more enabling environment. We hope to speak more about this whole act of whistleblowing. It's a big thing in the US, but not so much here in Malaysia. Here in Malaysia, it's a new concept that's slowly coming up. We have a lot of people whistleblowing on social media. We hope to create this culture where whistleblowers are seen as heroes. They are doing a national service. They are contributing to the country. They're helping us save public monies. They are helping to stop pollution, to stop environmental destruction. We need to celebrate them more, and we need to help whistleblowers navigate the legal system more. So there are law firms in the US that say that, oh, if you want to report about, for example, there's this one law firm that says that environmental, they explain what's environmental whistleblower laws. And if anyone want to report concerns about violations of environmental standards, you can be working for a company, a factory, very, very important. You could be an enforcement officer who got threatened by the factory after you saw something. You could be the residents around it. So this law firm, they openly say that if you have some concerns about reporting and you might face retaliation, feel free to contact us. And we will give you advice without any further charge or further obligation. So it's a whole ecosystem of people, civil society, community, government that can encourage this type of whistleblowing culture. Even in the civil service, it's so important to encourage whistleblowing among the civil servants to let them know that they won't suffer consequences by whistleblowing. In fact, they would be seen as heroes. That is very important.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I was reading an article that you wrote from Lesia Kini talking about all of this as well. And a couple of weeks ago, you said the Environment and Water Ministry, or CASA, they actually launched a 2021 to 2025 organizational anti-corruption plan. Am I correct? And that sort of outline action plans, you know, which also encompasses financial management, government and environmental management. Why is this such an important thing, especially, you know, at this point in time?
Well, first, it is important because, as you know, Malaysia had a strong drop in the corruption, Transparency International Corruption Index last year. Since the change of federal government, the whole culture or environment has been very much, we are not encouraged to speak up about anything. For example, a very horrible example would be how medical staff, there's a gag order on medical staff from speaking up about issues. So speaking up is very important to fighting corruption, mismanagement, malfeasance, all forms of wrongdoing. And we all went through the whole 1MDB fiasco. We all know how the former prime minister mismanaged huge sums of funds. And the National Anti-Corruption Plan was put in place by the Pakatan Harapan government. And this organizational anti-corruption plan is one of the initiatives under the National Anti-Corruption Plan. So our country has been plagued not just with petty corruption. You know, every other day we hear about policemen, immigration officers, this cartel, that scandal. So a lot is petty corruption over the table, under the table, countertop corruption. We also have grand corruption. Mm-hmm. And all these have severe impacts on our lives, not just in the sense of weakening our economy, weakening investors' trust in our government, in the management of our economy. Like what my report captures, it can also affect our health. And even now, gosh, even with the COVID situation, it's clearly affecting our health. You don't even need to look at plastic waste and how burning and all it will one day lead to cancer. You don't even need to look so far. But yeah, there's a lot of consequences of corruption because it leads to poor enforcement of laws and mismanagement of a lot of funds that could be used for better good to provide public services.
Yeah, I mean, in essence, it threatens human survival, isn't it?
Yeah. Everything is linked to everything, after all.
Yeah. So, I mean, whatever's happening, you know, in some secluded area in Sungai Petani is going to come to affect all of us at some point or another.
Yes. So, I've spoken to the Selangor Department of Environment. The head says, and she vouched for her people, she said there are no integrity issues in the Selangor Department of Environment, and I'm very happy to hear that. But then on the other hand, we also have cases where the government would raid a factory and realize that they had been tipped off. Someone told them that the enforcement officers are coming. So then you go there and then it's empty. You cannot catch anyone. And then I've spoken to officers in customs, officers in the Environment Ministry. Whenever I raise this issue of corruption, everyone tells me, oh, of course, there are one or two bad apples, but we're trying our best to stop it. It is not so helpful. So that's why for C4, we hope to, number one would be to strive towards law reforms, institutional reforms, to put in laws and mechanisms that can help people fight corruption.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I mean, those was also some of the recommendations from your report, which you released earlier this year, right? Are we seeing any sort of movements towards this happening? I mean, any sort of updates you have, you know, since the report came out?
Pertaining to my recommendations, not directly. We know that. So one of my recommendations is to ban been part of plastic waste, but unfortunately our plastic lobby is very strong and that will never happen. But the but CASA, the Ministry of Environment and Water, has been working hard. They have commenced a study in collaboration with Academy Science Malaysia to look at strengthening environmental governance in Malaysia. So they identify all the areas and all the loopholes that can be strengthened. And the ministry is also working on something called Malaysia's Circular Economy Roadmap for Plastics. And they, for this Circular Economy Roadmap for Plastics, they have engaged businesses, government, and also CSOs, NGOs, and academics. So all these are, there's good effort being done by the Ministry of Environment. But again, it goes down to who has the jurisdiction, who has the bidang kuasa, where they draw their power from, punca kuasa. So, for example, let's say Ministry of Environment and Water wants to talk about strengthening environmental governance. But to what extent is their powers, right? Taking the example of the import of paper waste. So, China didn't just ban plastic, China banned in total 32 different types of materials. So all these different types of waste materials are also coming to Malaysia. We're just not sure how much and what exactly. But one very clear one is paper waste, because I think 5-6 major paper factories are being set up all over Malaysia, waste paper processing, in collaboration with major waste paper players in China. So these big companies are coming to Malaysia and setting up shop. So, okay, when we talk about waste paper coming in, so every factory, before you set up factory, you need to submit an environmental impact assessment. So they can submit it to the Department of Environment, and the Department of Environment will give feedback on how this is not so good, that's not so good, please improve this, that, and redo it and meet our standards. So that's fine. But then when you talk about paper imports, the import permit is given by the Ministry of International Trade and Industry, MITI. MITI is giving out the import permits for waste paper. So if MITI gives out the manufacturing licenses and the import permits for the waste paper, and then they come in, and then there's potential for serious environmental pollution, can the DOE, can the Ministry of Environment say, no, I don't want this project? What do you think?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so the Ministry of Environment can say, oh, we want to strengthen environmental governance. Okay, we want to have proper standards and all. But if we know that this mining will cause irreversible damage, we know that this factory will bring in a lot of waste that no matter how you try to hide and all, there will be consequences on the environment. Can they say no? Does MITI have this? Because climate change affects all of us, right? Okay. But MITI needs to promote industry. Will they promote industry that is environmentally responsible? Do they have the capacity to do so? Do they have the expertise to do so? We don't know. And they are the ones approving all the manufacturing licenses and all the import permits. So I spoke to one, this was very disturbing for me, but I think I should share it. I spoke to an officer. I won't say from which industry, but then I spoke to an officer who promotes industry lah, in Malaysia lah. And then I mentioned to him that, okay, this industry might cause environmental impacts and residents are not happy, things like that. And then he said that, oh, this is the responsibility of the Department of Environment. As civil servants, we all need to protect the welfare of the people. We not just need to do our jobs, but we need to take care of our people. So he said that he's certain that anything that's environmentally harmful, DOE will put their foot down and it won't go on. And then after a while, he stopped answering my calls and emails. And I heard from somewhere else that there was some pressure from somewhere else. Yeah, those kind of things. So in Malaysia, talk about who has the thickest cable, pressure from above, all these are very common. And all these are things that we need to continuously talk about, whistleblow about, and fight. It's a never-ending battle that we need to just keep pushing at it.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, you know, we really need to protect our whistleblowers, because, you know, we have also heard of things where, you know, lawsuits are used to sort of intimidate people from speaking up or to silence them. I mean, we saw, you know, that even happened with newspapers, right, who report on issues about this. Even they are being sued about talking about it. Am I correct?
Yes, thanks for bringing it up. So there's this thing now that human rights activists are creating awareness about. It's called strategic lawsuits against public participation. So in short, it has a very catchy acronym. It's called SLAPS. So if you got a lawsuit because you reported someone doing something bad, you get slapped. So strategic lawsuits against public participation. They don't want you to speak up. So one example, a recent example, is Malaysia Kini being fined 550,000 ringgit for reporting about the impact of this company, Raup Australian Gold Mining. So the case was the people around there complained, the people of Bukit Koman around Raup, they were complaining that this mining factory is affecting the environment and affecting their health. So Malaysia Kini reported about it. And Raup Australian Gold Mining, they slapped defamation suits on the people. One is a resident there. And they also slapped, they filed a case for libel and malicious falsehood against the vice president of the Pahang Bau Cyanide in Gold Mining Action Committee. Okay, it's a residence committee lah, against cyanide and gold mining. So they slapped a lawsuit on her, and they also slapped a lawsuit on Malaysia Kini for reporting it. So the case with the vice president, the activist, she won the case. So the high court and then court of appeal and then the federal court, they said that they ruled that the defendant, the woman, was protecting the welfare of the residents. And then suddenly this Malaysia Kini, who is reporting the case, is suddenly slapped with a fine for reporting it. The High Court initially ruled that Malaysia Kini wasn't wrong. And then after that, the High Court ruled that Malaysia Kini was carrying out responsible journalism and reportage. And then suddenly the Court of Appeal and the Federal Court ruled that their articles are accusatory and damaging. So that's, this again goes back to how it takes a whole infrastructure and many, many different stakeholders to put in place systems that are just.
Okay. All right. I'm afraid we're running out of time. It's a huge problem. But I guess, you know, everybody, all the different stakeholders are trying to tackle it. I mean, those who are concerned about it, of course, are trying their best to tackle it. The report is there, of course, for anybody to read. I strongly recommend it. It's a very robust report. You know, so much information there. Just before I let you go, you know, any last message that you'd like to leave us with, you know, with regard to this?
Yes. So my portfolio in C4 is focusing on environmental governance. And now we know that climate change is a major risk that all of us face. After the COVID risk, climate change is one of the most serious challenges that we are facing in the 21st century. So I just want to steal Transparency International's tagline: fighting climate change means fighting corruption. Because I'm going to repeat that corruption is the root of all evil, corruption and the love of money. So in order to fight climate change, in order to fight anything, fraud, money laundering by big companies, in order to fight wildlife trafficking, in order to challenge death in custody, things like that, in order to have a more just world, we need to tackle corruption. And secondly, in order to tackle corruption, whistleblowers are very, very important, because they have the information of the wrongdoing, and they can get the perpetrators taken to court, taken to task. But the perpetrators are usually very powerful. So we need to institute structures that can, number one, encourage whistleblowers, number two, assist them, number three, protect them, and number four, celebrate the important work that they do.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Wong Kui Yee. She's a researcher at the Center to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, or the C4 Center. And do head to c4center.org. That's C4Center.org. And read the report titled "Malaysia is Not a Garbage Dump: Citizens Against Corruption, Complacency, Crime and Climate Crisis." And you'll read all about it there. And also don't forget to join that webinar, which is happening this Wednesday, right, Kui Yee?
Yes, you can just drop us a message on our Facebook and sign up for the webinar.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. And if you missed any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, just search for the podcast on the BFM app or at bfm.my/earth. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.